Bryan. It's That's Life with Mark Snyder. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Mark.
Everybody thinks I'm a nice girl, and that's true, except for one little hitch. When I'm not being a nice girl, I'm getting in touch with my inner bitch. Some people have an inner child. Some people hear an inner voice. Some people have inner calm. Good for them. But me, I've got no choice. Some people have an inner cop. Some people hear an inner clown. But I've got me an inner bitch, and it's hard to keep a darn inner bitch down. Is this your theme song? Somehow I learned. I'm psychic that way. If you get a job at Dionne Warwick. So give me an example of my inner bitch. Here we go. One day I'm walking around in my neighborhood, and a disheveled looking woman comes up to me, and she's wearing a sign that says, "Please help me, I am so hungry." So I dig deep into my pocket, and I give her a quarter, and I go, "Here you go. Good luck to you." And she says, "Oh, thanks a lot, and God bless." But as I walk away, I say to myself, my inner bitch says to myself, "I don't think she's going to use that quarter to buy food. I think she's going to use that quarter to buy booze." And her inner bitch looks at me and says, "25 cents? Thanks a lot, you cheap slut." But we look back at each other and we smile, recognizing the subtle communication our two inner bitches have had, and it feels good. Some people have an inner child. Some people hear an inner voice. Some people have inner peace. Well, me, I've got no choice. Some people have an inner cop. Some people have an inner clown, but I've got me an inner bitch, and it's hard to keep that inner bitch down.
Dean, this is Mark Snyder at PMP Network in Boston. How are you?
Oh, fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Calling to talk to you about your upcoming concert this weekend and also the great new CD that you got out.
Oh, thank you very much. What is PMP?
PMP Network. It's an internet location, PMPnetwork.com. And we're also on the radio in Boston on Magic 106.7.
Oh.
How are you?
Oh, good. Actually, I didn't realize you were calling. Was this set up before?
Yes.
Oh,
it sure was.
Okay. All right. I'm here because I'm going to see Dame Edna again for the 14th time, and I'm meeting a friend.
You just met another one on the phone. I've actually seen many of your concerts.
Oh, you have?
And I'm just wondering why you didn't decide to be a comedian, since you have the knack for that as well.
Oh, you know, once only did I ever play a comedy club. It was Catch a Rising Star, and it was so horrible that I wrote up my experience and it ran as a story in New York Magazine, and they paid me $350 for it. This was back in 1977.
Wow.
But it was sort of like the theme for, without knowing it, the theme for my career, how to turn your humiliations into...
It's a big bucks.
It's a goal.
Yeah. Now, before we even start talking about your music, which is wonderful, and then brand new CD called "Getting in Touch with Your with My Inner Bitch," which, can I say that on the air? I guess I can. I just did, so it's all right. I want to know about the story about Julia Roberts. This is pretty funny stuff.
Oh, you mean how she ended up polishing my shoes?
Yeah.
Well, I was asked at the very last minute to replace Sarah Jessica Parker in this benefit performance of Cinderella to play an evil stepsister at Paul Newman's camp, the Hole in the Wall Gang camp for kids out in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually being done on a day that I was playing the night before 200 miles away, and the next day I was playing another 100 miles away. So it was actually along the route that I was going to be traveling anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I got there in the afternoon, and we had one little run-through, and then we did the performance in front of 300 people who each paid $1,000 a ticket. And the way I actually met Julie Roberts was at the rehearsal. I was sitting on stage, and she crawled across the stage and started polishing my shoes, because they said, and Joanne Woodward was the narrator, and she said, "And here comes Cinderella, and her stepmother and stepsisters are so mean to her." And so she starts polishing my shoes. And then I was sitting next to Carole King, and she starts polishing Carole King's shoes, and then I leaned down and I said to her, "She did my shoes again." But So that's how I actually met her, and we all shared a dressing room, and I, you know, I gotta say that she was the nicest person. You know, she was as nice and as sweet and as helpful and as excited about being in this little play as anybody you'd ever want to meet.
Have you seen her new movie?
No, I haven't yet.
It's excellent.
Oh, yeah, I've heard, God, the reviews are really good.
It's really good.
Yeah, so I'm really, you know, there's certain people like her and Rosie O'Donnell once did me a nice turn, too, that nobody can ever say anything bad about them to me because I know, I know that they're good.
What did Rosie O'Donnell do for you?
In 1989, I was in the New York Music Awards show. I was up for one of the awards, and I actually won it. But they gave it to me backstage because when I performed, I was booed off stage by the balcony, which was filled with teenagers who wanted to hear a band called White Lion, who I don't even know if they're still in existence. And so there I was with my guitar singing a song, and these kids going, you, White Lion, and they were just screaming and carrying on, and it was... And Rosie O'Donnell, who was the MC, came out afterwards and said, there's no need for rudeness. Why did you do that? She's a good performer. She just went on and on and on. Meanwhile, backstage, they handed me my award that we wouldn't possibly bring you out again to go through that.
So
I was handed my award backstage so the audience couldn't tear me apart. And I wrote Rosie a note. This was back in the days before she was really famous and she was in the phone book. So I just looked up her address and I thanked her for being... So for sticking up for me in such a horrible performance situation, and she wrote back and she said, you're a really good performer, and those kids were idiots, and don't let that bother you, and just keep going, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, it's talking about helping people. You have been doing that for years. Every year we receive your compilation of different guest artists and things like that, and they got you back. They got you gone. They did one for you, Big League Babe, a little while ago.
Yeah. All these people sang my songs, and it was they did something which I wish they hadn't done. They surprised me with it on stage in front of an audience at the Bottom Line, and I was so shocked that my first thought was, I must be sick. There's something they're not telling me. I'm not old enough to have a tribute. My God, that's something that happened to you at the end of your career. But it's beautifully done. People like Dee Carstensen and Dar Williams and David Wilcox, all these people singing my songs, and they took a lot of time and did very thoughtful, intelligent performances. They didn't just sing the songs the way I did it. They really got creative, which is really, really flattering.
Talking to Christine Lavin. And again, if you want to see her, she is going to be this Saturday night at the Emerson Umbrella in Concord, Mass. At 8 o'clock, tickets are still available, and if you want to charge your tickets by phone, you can at 781-641-2131, and our CD, I'm sure, will be available there. Christine Lavin's Getting in Touch with My Inner Bitch. This is a really great CD, and one of the reasons why I really like it is because, first of all, there's some songs you've already released on here, done live, and second of all, some of your kibitzing between the songs is in there.
Yeah.
Well, and I kind of like that.
Well, you know, that's what going out to a live performance is all about. It's, you know, I have so much fun talking with the audience, and unexpected things happen. And, you know, it's so great that that record was, it's from five different performances from around the country. And nobody knew, for one thing, that we were taping. And even though I knew it was being taped, I didn't think I was making an album, so I wasn't nervous. So it is what it is, and I think it's a really good example of, you know, how much fun you can have if you go to a folk concert.
Now, you've taken a page out of the Ani DiFranco lines of doing your own label.
Mm-hmm.
You were on other labels before, but the last few CDs are on your own label,
uh-huh.
ChristineLavin.com Records. What's it like being a record executive as well as... I understand your mom helps out, because I know we talked to her about this interview.
That's my sister-in-law.
Is that your sister-in-law?
Yeah, she lives in Rochester, New York.
And I thought that was your mom.
No, she does all the drudge work, you know, the mailing out of the CDs and, you know, the basic, I do all the creative side. And it's funny, though, because, you know, I am the president of my own record company, but sometimes I'm also the messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And very often I'm the secretary, too, because I have a little home office and
I
type 90 words a minute. But it's really very gratifying in some ways because... it used to be whenever I would make albums, I would have to run everything by the record company, and very often they would want to make changes that to me made no sense, like the sequencing of the songs or just things, or the way the package looks. Because the package for this one, the cover is a pug dog.
Yeah.
A really mean-looking little pug.
Now, whose doggy is that?
I've never met the dog. Huh. I actually was looking for a picture of a mean puppy, and I know the photographer. He specializes in photographing pets.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I did, in the liner notes inside, I give his name is Henry. It's actually a boy dog on the front. And I even give the name of the owner. But
he's kind of cute.
It is cute.
Yeah, he's got that big eye.
Those pugs are something. They're feisty little things. And I think that the image of, you know, all of us carry a little inner bitch inside us. And I kind of think that's what it looks like. I tell people to look at the cover and they look at me and they think, what are you doing with a cover like this? I said, that's me without makeup. But, you know, some of the other record companies I've been with before probably would not have allowed me to do a cover like that. So so that's why it's great to be able to make all those creative choices myself.
Since we've had pretty much everybody in folk on our show except you, let's go a little bit back in time and introduce our audience to you a little bit more. Where are you from? How did you learn to write music and play? And
I'm originally from Peekskill, New York. And which is just north of New York City, about 40 miles. And I actually learned how to play guitar by watching lessons on public television when I was 12 years old.
Huh.
I can't read music, but I would follow along with the teacher on the screen, and I got a book from the TV station for $1.
Hmm.
And I also know that Nancy Griffith also learned from the same teacher. Her name was Laura Weber, and I actually met her 26 years later in San Francisco when I was doing a concert there. She heard that I learned how to play guitar by watching lessons on PBS, and she saw my picture in the San Francisco Chronicle when she read that and figured out what year it was when her show was running, figured out how old I was, and figured, oh, it must be me. I must have been her teacher. And she came to my concert and sent her business card backstage and said, did I teach you how to play guitar? So we met 26 years later.
Wow.
So it's been it took me a long time. I didn't start making a living at this till 1984 when I quit my day job at Bellevue Hospital. And very slowly, I went from making $25,000 a year as a glorified secretary to making $6,000 a year as a folk singer.
Mm.
But very slowly, since 1985, I built my salary back up, and now I have health insurance and all that stuff too, so I take good care of business.
So Bellevue must have been an interesting place to work, and I assume a few songs came out of it.
You know, it's very interesting because in June of this year, Rounder Records, who I was with for 10 years, is reissuing an album I made back in the mid-80s. It was called Another Woman's Man. It was a 7-song vinyl EP. But we're reissuing it as a full-length CD. I went back through my archives and found radio interviews from that time with songs that I'd never recorded. And so now the record is coming out in June, but we've named it The Bellevue Years because most of it was written while I was working at Bellevue Hospital. And I even in the liner notes say, God forbid you should ever need this, but if you're ever in an accident in New York City, remember Bellevue Hospital has the best emergency room in New York. So I feel like all these years later, because I worked for the office that was it was basically a public relations office for the hospital, and they were always trying to remind people what a good hospital it was and not just an insane asylum, though it does have a very good psychiatric ward. So all these years later, I'm still trying to do good PR for the hospital.
Do you remember the first song you ever wrote and how old you were?
Oh, yeah. I was 13. The song was called The World is Coming to an End.
Mm, pleasant.
Yeah, even at the age of 13, I had sort of a twisted sense of humor.
I always found that I was writing songs when I was 9 and stuff, and poetry that's been published by a number of different places, and most of it was kind of depressing. I used to find that when I was depressed, I would write on the paper and dissipate that into the paper instead of carrying it around with me. I was wondering if you find you do any of that at all as well.
Oh, yeah. It's great therapy for songwriters like me to be able to put what we're feeling into words and music. And what's really gratifying is when we sing it to people and find out they've been thinking and feeling the same thing, but just don't have the ability to verbalize it, and we do.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I feel like a lot of us are kind of traveling musical therapists. Because I know I feel that way. If I hear a song written by somebody that's saying something that I have felt and maybe never even spoken out loud, it just totally rips your heart open, and it's a great feeling. We grow as humans, I think, when we go through these experiences.
You mentioned, we mentioned earlier about your incident with Julia Roberts at the Newman camp, and of course your turn as a part of the Cinderella spoof. Have you ever thought about acting at all? I mean, you know, acting and music is so close now with videos and everything like that. Have you thought about delving into that area?
No, but it's interesting. There's a lot of interest from the theatrical world in my music, especially because I'm here in New York. I'm doing 2 shows in May at a small cabaret here just for the Broadway and off-Broadway theatrical community. But it's been set up more as a way for them to come hear my material, for them to perform my work. I have absolutely zero training as an actor. You know, I'm a performer. Most folk performers, we kind of learn by doing. We sort of learn by the seat of our pants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know who really is a very good actor is Loudon Wainwright III.
Mm-hmm.
He actually thinks of music, I think, as his day job, and acting is really.
Yeah, he does love that. We talked to him a while back about that. Cheryl Wheeler is another one who really likes kind of theatrical type stuff, but has never pursued it.
Yeah, well, you know Cheryl. She wouldn't even put makeup on for one of her albums.
Exactly. Yes, the one for Capitol Records.
She's just the best, though. I think Cheryl Wheeler writes. She has such a knack for writing not only beautifully, carefully constructed, perfectly constructed songs that are in the folk vein, but they have really wide appeal.
Well, one of her songs she dedicated to me at Somerville Theater once, a song called Arrow, which is just one of the most magnificent songs ever written.
Isn't it? You hear a song like that, and you know it's an instant standard.
Mm.
And do you know that Garth Brooks has been doing her song, If It Were Up to Me, I Take Away the Guns?
Yes.
Yeah, except he doesn't actually sing that line of the song.
Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't want to lose his country crowd.
Yeah, but, you know, the fact that someone like Garth Brooks has picked up on Cheryl Wheeler's music, and I know Bette Midler, you know, has been singing her praises for years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of folk artists and folk writers who I feel are, like, very well-kept secrets. But as long as we know we just keep working and doing, eventually, you know, not for all of us, but for some out there, the music can really find a much wider audience.
Yeah, we have found people on our show. You know, Cheryl's been on a few times already, and people like Vance Gilbert and Christina Olsen. There's just a ton of incredibly talented people out there.
Yeah. By the way, are we live?
No, we're not.
Oh, okay.
We're on Memorex.
Okay. Vance Gilbert, I took him to see the Broadway show The Civil War because the character of Frederick Douglass looked and sounded and had the same vocal range that he did. And there was, and actually The Civil War is on tour, but Vance, I even introduced him to the assistant director because, and it was uncanny, the resemblance between the actor playing Frederick Douglass and Vance Gilbert. But
Vance is doing the Somerville Theater coming up with Susan Warner.
Oh, God.
Which is a nice concept.
Oh, my God. 2 performers who don't take any prisoners.
Yep.
The 2 of them are just... Oh, man, was that a great bill.
Yeah, they let loose, I'll tell you.
Yeah, who put that together?
I think it's Somerville Theater, so whoever usually books that theater did it.
Well, that's somebody should get a raise for that idea.
I agree, that's a good one. But again, you know, Christine Lavin will be at the Emerson Umbrella this Saturday, and you don't want to miss that one either.
Oh,
tickets only $17.50, and the phone number is 781-641-2131. Anybody else playing with you that day?
Well, yes. This is a big surprise, but... there's a school in, I think it's Kingsborough, is that how you say the name of the town in Massachusetts?
Not sure of that one.
It's called the Academy of Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
and their music club just did their annual musical, and it was an entire evening of my songs. And I couldn't go because I was working myself that weekend, so they wrote to me and said a whole bunch of them are coming to my concert. So I said, gee, would you like to get up and do a couple of my songs in the show? So the entire musical, we're going to have 15 students. In the second half of the concert, they're going to do 2 of my songs. It's not much of a surprise because I'm telling you, but I'm sure a lot of people won't know.
Well, people will be shocked.
Yeah, but isn't that...
Unless they hear this.
And we're also working on a big finale, which that part will be a surprise. We've got all kinds of things that we're going to do together at the end of the show. And I haven't even met these kids yet, but I got a bunch of email. That's one of the great things about the Internet. I got all this email from people who were at their show and said it was really wonderful. So I thought this could be their big break. You never know who's going to be in the audience.
Well, if people want to email you and talk to you about your music or anything, what is your email address?
Well, they have to do is go to my website, which is, you know, www.christinelavin.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's mail@christinelavin.com. Just, again, it's very simple.
Cool.
To email me there. Or they can post things on the discussion board.
And, of course, they can pick up the brand new CDs called Getting in Touch with My Inner Bitch.
See, you have no problem saying that.
I'm just a little nervous. I'm turning red and worried my mother and father are going to wash my mouth out with soap. It was nice talking to you, and thanks for taking some time out to talk to us.
Well, thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.